The Kentucky Derby, the Preakness, and whatnot. What does that mean to a horse like American Pharoah, who has run a lot lately, won quite a bit, but there might be some wear and tear on the horse, on the animal, because of what the owner said, that those kinds of things creep up around now.
They do. You know, the one positive thing, he's been training really well leading up. I would have liked to see him train more at Belmont. He's been training at Churchill. He galloped there today. I guess he looked great. He's been looking great since then. The one thing I do like about the Preakness, he wasn't really asked. He only got the whip once, so there's a lot left of the tank. I think the question is, all these horses have never run a mile and a half. Is he the cream of the crop? Yes. And Mike, being an athlete like you, you know, you can be on the best team, but does that mean you're going to win every game? No. Mm-hmm. So anything could happen. You know, could he beat these horses if he was well-rested just like them? Yeah, he would beat them. But tomorrow's something different for all of them. He has the ability, but does he have the ability to get a mile and a half?
That's incredible. Johnny Love, sports horse race handicapper for the Star Tribune.
And if it does happen tomorrow and there is a Triple Crown winner, Johnny, we're calling your cell phone, expected to ring on Monday as well.
I think you should, and I think you should go to Canterbury to get yourself a $2 win ticket. It's something you can have and you give to your kids. Everybody does it. I did it last year at California Chrome. I get a $2 ticket. You put it in a frame and you have it for a long time.
I think that's a great idea.
Well, it's a Triple Crown. I live right down there in Canterbury.
Will
too,
you buy me one?
Yeah, I'll get you one.
I also, because I have a graduation down in Shakopee,
so
but it's not on Sunday. It's only
Saturday.
On Sunday, so I need this on Saturday. So if you're going to go grab one, would you mind grabbing me one?
I will do
cash.
It. I will do it.
Thank you.
You guys could go tonight and make advanced wagering, but I know you're busy.
Wow, man. Well, hey, I'll be over there. I live right down there, so I'll right across the street, in fact. So I'll go down there and make good on it, and I can frame it when this horse,
awesome.
American Pharoah, wins the Triple Crown. Johnny Love, thank you so much for your time.
Best in the business. We love having
guys,
you on.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
You bet, and good luck tomorrow. This is a big thing for someone like Johnny Love.
It's huge.
This is huge. I mean, he was trying to come up with an analogy of what this would be like in another sport. I have to think it's something that keeps happening over and over and over again in a short time frame. So it would be like a hockey team, like the Blackhawks going 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, just running the table. But that's what this horse has to do to win the Triple Crown.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe, but it's individual, though. It's not a team thing. So maybe a golfer, but I mean...
Golf, running. Yeah, absolutely.
I don't know. But
like winning three majors... Like Tiger did. He had,
boom,
actually
boom,
had, the,
boom, boom,
had the Tiger World Slam, kind of, when he won all four, but not in the calendar year.
SportsCenter today was saying that it's the toughest thing to do in all of sport.
It probably is. I mean,
it hasn't happened since 1978.
It's unbelievable since 78. I mean, it has to be.
Yeah.
It's incredible. Either way, I'm watching.
Oh, absolutely.
I'm not the biggest horse race enthusiast, but I certainly am going to watch this.
My favorite part about it too is it lasts like a couple of minutes and then it's over. I mean, you tune in. I think the post time is 5:50 Central Time. You can watch it on NBC, right. I do believe. Is that what it says there? 5:50 on NBC. So
5:50 Central Time.
Check it out.
NBC. Next up, Tom Schreier with Cold Omaha. We don't know whether it's going to be a run or a pass. We know it's going to be one of those.
It's going to be a run because we're talking to Adrian Peterson.
Oh, well, then that's the way we'll do it then, and we'll do that right after the break.
Radioactive Sports in the Afternoon. 105 The Ticket. The Saturday night game of the week. St. Paul Saints baseball on Sports Radio 105 The Ticket.
Charging hard. He leaves his feet and dives to make the catch.
Our broadcast start with Live from Lower Town with Ben Holson and Sean Aronson. We talk Saints, baseball, and more starting at 5 p.m. Then the Saints pregame show starts at 6:45 p.m., followed by play-by-play from Sean.
Drilled high, deep left field. Well hit. Way back. Goodbye.
Every Saturday, Saints home game on Sports Radio 105, The Ticket.
People ask what Omaha means. It's a run play, but it could be a pass play.
You know, we try to get him acclimated on the things that we're going. And, you know, he's going to have to put in some more work time as far as all that. But there's really not a prettier sight when he's got the ball in his hand, you know?
No, I know.
You got that one right. Well, when we talk about Cold Omaha, we always say, you know, it's either a run or a pass. There's no question it's a run. And when you talk about Adrian Peterson with head coach Mike Zimmer, his face kind of lights up because he gets a pretty good running back this year to run the football for him. Everything holds up. Health, it could be a pretty good offensive unit for Mike Zimmer. And,
could be.
It could be a great offensive unit. It really could. Yes, it could be. And I just I love it when we get a guy in here like Tom Schreier to talk about it, because he's been down at Winter Park. He's been at some of the sessions that I've sat through with Mike Zimmer explaining you know, what he looks at in players. And, of course, getting a guy like Adrian Peterson. As I mentioned, he's got to be happy. Tom Schreier, what do you think?
Yeah, he's got to be pumped. First of all, I'm calling for Sam's wedding. Want to give a quick shout-out to Sam Gretchen. Obviously, big, big moment. Also showed up late, which is obviously what I do all the time, which is unfortunate. That is Nick Hallett's fault, though. I want that on the record. I was set to... He literally went at 5:30. Like, most of it... I've only been to a couple weddings, and most of them family and stuff, but... Like, he went at 5:30, and you guys know Sam, that guy's precise.
Yeah.
I couldn't have been closer to 5:30 than that, but, yeah, I walked in, I was like, I called Nick, and I was like, yeah, dude, you know, his wedding's ready to go. Like, you better get over here. But yeah, no. Anyways, like Peterson, I was, you know, better late than never, but showed up. People were excited, hopefully. I don't know. But the offense would be great with him.
Yeah, no kidding. I love your article. Adrian Peterson has a point about NFL contracts, and we'll get into that here in just a second, Tom. Tom Schreier from Cold Omaha and our writing team at 105theticket.com. One thing that I didn't necessarily agree with, where you said suddenly Peterson seems like a complimentary piece rather than the focal point of the offense. He'll get his touches, no doubt, but this is Bridgewater's team now, and it's a passing league. And I get that, and I understand that, but still the focal point when defense is game plan against the Minnesota Vikings, it's going to be heavily Adrian Peterson. And I do agree with the fact that, you know, that he may not be the most focal point, because that we have a quarterback that's much better than Christian Ponder. We have wide receivers that can actually catch the ball, run routes, speedy wide receivers that can hopefully stretch the defense a little bit. But Adrian Peterson's still going to get his touches, man. They're still going to pound him.
Yeah, and that's what, I mean, that's kind of why I waited to, you know, write the article, is I just wanted to hear, you know, from Turner's mouth what was going to happen. I mean, they're really like, I think they're non-committal with him a little bit, just because you don't know what Adrian Peterson is now. I think he's going to be a great running back. There are a lot of good, you know, 30-year-old running backs. But you don't know with kind of the injury he's sustained, and then obviously the time off, given the allegations and whatnot with his child. You know, what you're getting is he going to be healthier because of that, you know, or is he going to be rusty? You know, it sounds like he's picking up the offense, but again, they're not going to come out and say, well, yeah, he's not picking up the offense. We don't know how to use him. So, you know, it's the same team, obviously, and he's been around, you know, Zimmer's staff before last year. But I think he's going to be a big part, but I think it comes down to what Bridgewater does. I think it's, you know, can he hit Mike Wallace? Can Rudolph stay healthy? What about McKinnon as kind of a lightning? You know, all of a sudden he looks like he has a lot of weapons. You know, we haven't talked about Jarius Wright and Cordarrelle Patterson. Patterson needs to step up. I think he's a big part of the offense, and I think Jarius Wright's kind of an X factor. He's kind of a fun, you know, wide receiver that they can use kind of as a hybrid.
I mean, I like Jarius Wright in the slot, actually, taking it across the middle, where Cordarrelle, I know, won't be effective. I don't think he'll catch the ball across the middle either. I think that he's more of a downfield threat, and he is the X factor for me, actually, is Cordarrelle Patterson. I really think that if anyone's going to be the big surprise and the difference maker, it's an athlete that we know is a great athlete, like Cordarrelle Patterson, but he's got to come back from the dead. And that's all there is to it. Now, as far as Adrian getting less touches, I don't really see that happening either. I know that with the Dallas Cowboys and teams like even the Patriots and the Seattle Seahawks, is that they pass the ball and they have a nice run balance between Marshawn Lynch or Blount there in New England, or certainly with Murray last year in Dallas. They throw the ball and they run the ball, and that's what's... It's going to come back to that sooner or later. I know it's been a passing league forever and ever, but it's still, they're the best teams are the ones that have the big running back and the quarterback that can throw a football to at least one really good receiver. You see that same thing happening in Green Bay with Lacy and those receivers up there with Aaron Rodgers. I really see us becoming that again, is a big-time running team with a kid that's really going to turn into a great quarterback.
Yeah, I think two thoughts there. First of all, I think Seattle's kind of the model you got to go with. Like, really strong defense, good quarterback, gets the job done, has enough weapons around him. Mm-hmm. And again, like, I guess Peterson would be Lynch. You know, and again, it's up to people whether or not, and probably up to, you know, Peterson, whether or not, you know, he's on that level anymore. But, and I think he is. I think he's one of the best players in the NFL still. The other thought there is I was at OTAs, and they were actually spreading Peterson out, and it looked like they were going to throw him the ball. So, I'm going to be curious, like, kind of if Turner has some faith in Peterson's hands, and that's something, you know, a healthy Peterson without, before the injury and before, you know, the child abuse stuff, that wasn't there. So, I mean, I think maybe they're trying that out, and worst case scenario, I think McKinnon actually can do that out of the backfield. So, regardless of how, you know, who's the focal point or whatever, this offense is scary, and it comes down to health. Can Peterson stay healthy? Can Rudolph stay healthy? Can Wallace win the offense really quick? You know, Bridgewater doesn't take a sophomore spot, stuff like that.
Yeah, Tom Schreier, Cold Omaha, 105theticket.com, part of our writing team. I do agree with what you said in the article that AP will be used as a decoy. It's fun to see Norv Turner just kind of be giddy with all these new weapons that he has. Because last year I was sitting there thinking, God, Norv Turner, this offensive genius, and what's really going on here? Because it seemed, you know, pretty conservative. But Norv lined him up. Norv lined up Adrian Peterson as a flanker yesterday. So what are some of the other decoys you think AP could provide besides the obvious play-action fake, which could be deadly with Mike Wallace running a go?
Yeah, it shouldn't be understated. Like, that's a big fake. And it's so awesome that first play, and this is, I think, Turner being a guy who's been around the, you know, the league a little bit, that first play when Peterson comes back, they fake the handoff to him when everyone thinks he's going and lets Teddy do his thing. You know, the one thing I was wondering on kind of like short yard downs, Sam and I were talking, you know, at OTAs, and I was like, dude, I think you want to use Azzy out of there a little bit just because you don't want to like beat up Peterson. Obviously, that's going to be a tough call, but what about putting them both in the backfield and giving some options so that teams wonder, okay, is the ball going to Peterson? Or in the odd chance, maybe they're struggling on third down or something, you hand it to Asiata, who's kind of that ball. And we talked about this. He has that nose for the end zone. He can get you those 3 yards if you need him. Other than that, I mean, I think, yeah, you'll see a lot of play actions. And hopefully they do something, and again, you don't want to overcomplicate the offense, but something kind of tricky, you know, reverses or something like that, getting Jarius Wright and Cordarrelle Patterson involved. Because I feel like that's kind of a strength of theirs, especially while Patterson isn't running routes very well right now.
Yeah, it's going to be distribution, no question about it. I don't know exactly how that's going to affect Adrian Peterson's carries. Certainly, I think they need to bring a well-rounded running back into the mix also to rest him and to be a great effective back would be Asiata, still out of the backfield to catch the football, to block on passing plays or anything else. He's not a decoy. He's a proven back. In a system last year with no offensive linemen, they still managed between him and McKinnon to rank this offensive, the running game, I think seventh overall in the NFL. So I agree with everything you're saying, and I do think that Peterson's going to have to take somewhat fewer reps than he normally is used to. That it won't be that 30 or 25 anymore, more like 20, 21, 22 carries at the most. But Tom Schreier, thank you very much for your time. The wake-up call with Cold Omaha on Sunday mornings from 8 to 10.
8 to 11 now, sorry.
Ooh. Oh, my. It's 8 to 11 now.
Yeah, and this is me solo. This is what happens. Sam goes and gets married, goes on a honeymoon, says, hey, Tom. Keep in mind, he's my editor, too. Goes, hey, Tom, you know, I'll see you later. They drop me in the middle of the ocean. But here's the thing. This is the great thing about Cold Omaha. Literally, the night that he told me that, I just fired off a couple texts, and people were there, you know. Like, and it was tough. Chad Graff is out in the Bahamas. Obviously, he's earned it. He's done great work for the Wild and the Pioneer Press. Master couldn't, you know, doesn't want to come on until like 10:30, and I was like, that's Nick's spot. Nick is our party guy. We're, you know, we're not going to use you, but you know, Hallett will be there. Chris Shadow will be there. Brandon Warren will be there. I mean, you name it from Cold Omaha, they're represented. And honestly, a great group of guys. It's so awesome that they can do this for me, because trust me, no one wants to hear me talk for 3 hours straight.
Yeah, you are quite the character, though, Tom Schreier. We love you to death. Don't get too drunk. I'm glad that Nick Hallett is driving you tonight, is what it sounds like, because I know after you have a couple of drinks, you get out of control, as if you weren't already. But it's always fun to listen to you guys when we wake up Sunday mornings. They're heading to church or brunch or whatever you decide to go to. So Cold Omaha, listen to Tom Schreier and the rest of the Cold Omaha guys. Our writing team at 105 The Ticket, Sunday mornings from 8 to 11. Tom, have a great weekend, and tell Sam congratulations for us.
Yeah, no, thanks again. I'll see you later.
All right, Tom. Next up, Mike's break. We're going to talk about the right tackles and how they stack up and how they rank the right tackles in the National Football League, coming straight back to my home stomping grounds with offensive linemen. Also, caller number 15 at 651-989-9105 wins a pair of tickets to see the St. Paul Saints play the Joplin Blasters. This Tuesday,
wow.
June 9th, at the new CHS Field in Lower Town. So caller number 15, get your tickets at 651-989-9105. Be that 15th caller, and you got them. Come on back. It's the right tackle breakdown next.
Listen to the Jim Rome Show weekdays at 11 a.m. on Sports Radio 105 The Ticket.
Back to Radioactive Sports. The superstar Mike Morris and Ben Holson on Sports Radio 105 The Ticket.
Okay, everybody, a little fun and right. Games. Breaking down the Bleacher Report NFL 1000. What is the NFL 1000? Well, What the NFL 1000 intends to do is to scout and grade and then rank the best players at each position before putting them in order, and then, of course, breaking ties to come up with the top 1,000 players. And it's a pretty interesting thing. It's been going on for quite a while on Bleacher Report. I've been following that from position to position today. It was right tackles, and it's quite a position when you think about it. Number one, it's to the front side of the quarterback. The position is made up of the kind of player that has great feet, great hands, but has a little mean streak too. That right tackle takes on some pretty tough featured defensive players, not only a defensive end from time, but mostly, and in this day and age, a lot of stunts from the linebackers and the stunts and the twisting games that they receive. And you have got to have great feet and great hands and placement of both hands on a big-time athlete rushing the quarterback. But it's to the front side, and that's what makes it an intriguing position. I've seen some great ones here. I've played with some very good ones here. Tim Irwin was about as good a right tackle as I saw here with the Vikings.
But they don't get the notoriety. They don't get the spotlight.
Because the backside, the left side, blocking the backside is the featured tackle on the team, because he's protecting the quarterback's backside. That's the big money position.
So my question to you then is like Steve Young, left-handed quarterback. A couple left-handed quarterbacks in the NFL in the history. Could Phil Loadholt play right tackle for Steve Young?
No.
What kind of right, is that a left tackle that's moved to right tackle, or how does that work when it's a left-handed quarterback?
It's a right tackle. It's a pure right tackle. It can't be a guy that is a fantastic left tackle, but can't necessarily come over and kick slide out of a right-handed stance. It's a different thing. Now, guard is a little bit different. We've talked about guard lately because of our situation up front with the Minnesota Viking offensive line, the left guard that we lost, Charlie Johnson, trying to replace and fill in that void for Charlie Johnson. That'll be a task. They've asked Brandon Fusco to take that spot. He's been the solid starting right guard for the Minnesota Vikings. That isn't that big a deal. It really isn't that big. It can be a difference maker, and some people would prefer not to be asked to do it. Fusco said, yeah, I'm going to go over there. I've done it. I've played some left guard in high school, some in college at Slippery Rock. I'll do it. I'll give it a shot. He knows he can play it. When you have to kick out as a left tackle and a right tackle, those are different things completely. When it comes to setting up and going to war with a defensive end coming on from an outside rush or maybe your outside shoulder, which is a 9 technique, to a 7, which is an inside technique on the tackle, that's... You have to know what you're doing out there. And that kick slide has to be absolutely perfect. And because if you don't set properly, you're getting your ass kicked. And if you get your rear end kicked, the quarterback dies, basically. The quarterback gets killed. So that's what you can't just have a left tackle who is incredibly talented already. We know that the left tackle is probably the best offensive lineman you got.
Mm-hmm.
He's not going to just slide over and play right tackle and be as effective if that's his natural position.
Sure.
So you have to find someone who is pure, real deal right tackle to back to the to block for a left-handed quarterback, like Kenny Stabler, as you mentioned, Steve Young.
Yeah.
It's just a different game completely. But we have a right-handed quarterback. His name is Teddy Bridgewater.
Ted Bridgewater.
It's Ted now. We're trying to toughen it up a little bit. And all you Rubio fans, it's not Ricky. It's Rick. Okay? Just let you know.
Ricardo.
So I know that everyone wants to know where Loadholt sort of stacks up in this, but we'll take it down the line, and I'll kind of let you know where everyone, this is ranking the top 35 right tackles in the NFL. There are some people that have played, two or three different guys have played outside of starting. If a guy goes down, we have another, like Mike Harris from last year, jumped in for Phil Loadholt. Jonathan Martin with the Carolina Panthers now.
What?
Jonathan Martin.
From the Miami Dolphins to the San Francisco 49ers to the Carolina Panthers. He's number 35.
I guess
to be.
So. He's with the Carolina Panthers now, but I guess that they will rank him dead last amongst players who have started at right tackle over the last year. This isn't best tackle of the decade or of even one game. These were the guys that were ranked for just playing a full season, a regular season last year. At number 34... if I can just pull that up, Marshall Newhouse with the New York Giants. I mean, the guy, he was with the Cincinnati Bengals last year, but he's moved on in free agency to the New York Giants. We have DJ, I love this guy, DJ Fluker from the San Diego Chargers. One big, mean, burly dude. And
he's a beast.
I can't believe that he's not higher on this list. We got him. This is interesting. That's why I did the whole list now. At number 32. So now we're down to 32 teams. number 32 right tackle.
Go Leibold.
No, actually not. Chantrell Henderson.
Oh, your guy.
Our kid from Crete and Durham Hall by way of
Milo
University
Barbell.
Of Miami and Milo Barbell. So, look, he's real deal, and there he is. After 1 year, he's already ranked as one of the right tackles at 32. Well, he wasn't the last.
He was a starting right tackle, so he's basically the worst starter in the league.
With three people having jumped in for someone from time to time. I don't know why at 35 exactly, but Jordan Mills of the Chicago Bears, a decent tackle. The list gets a little shorter. We got Austin Patzer for the Jacksonville Jaguars. He's horrible. I think he gave up about 25,000 sacks last year, but he's ranked somehow ahead of Chantrell Henderson. Justin Britt, good player for the Seahawks. You know him, and he's been around a while. I think he's a great player, and we haven't heard Phil Loadholt's name yet, have we?
Mm-mm.
So this is getting kind of – remember Gabe –
Karimi?
I think it's Karimi from Wisconsin.
Karimi,
remember when
yeah.
He came out with the Bears? He's with the
Chicago
Falcons
Bears.
Now. He's with the Falcons
okay.
Now. And he disappeared in Chicago.
Pick, wasn't he?
He was a first-round draft pick. I think a fairly high draft pick.
And Mike Tice, disappointment.
And Tice didn't use him right. Tice didn't like him at the Bears when he was the offensive line coach there. So Gabe fell away from the game for a while. He faded away and resurfaced now with the Atlanta Falcons, and they have him ranked 28th now, so I guess he's making a comeback surge of some sort.
It's funny how the Chicago Bears will draft a particular player, Greg Olsen as well, tight end. Draft him high, and they're supposed to come in, they're supposed to be a great player, and they just don't pan out for the Chicago Bears. They go somewhere else, and they become really good players in the NFL.
And that's you know what? This guy is going to turn out, I think, because he's under better tutelage as an offense, with a better offensive line coach. Tice, not exactly that. Ryan Harris, we know him.
Oh,
he was with
Broncos.
The Denver Broncos for a long time. He's a player.
He's not with the Broncos anymore?
I don't think he is.
Clady, too, I want to say. Their left tackle just
season and he's from here, isn't he, Clady? Did he go to high school here, or was it Harris that went to school?
I don't know. I don't think so.
Look that
I
up.
I could have been wrong. But he's done. Didn't he have another knee injury? He's done now. He's screwed.
Clady did, yes.
God. Poor Peyton Manning.
I know. Well, he's going to have some issues this time around, I think. Might be the last, might be the swan song for Peyton Manning. What do you think?
Yeah, there's a good possibility. And I think maybe he should have gone out last year on his own terms, because with that decimated offensive line, he may not be going out on his own terms. He may be going out on a stretcher.
Probably.
I don't wish him any ill will. I love Peyton Manning, but I'm just saying.
He could be carted off. You never know. Juwan James.
Oh, Juwan.
Juwan James for the Miami Dolphins. A good young player, Paul Kornick, with the Denver Broncos. He's a free agent with the Broncos this time around. But, you know, we're getting down there. And we haven't heard his name yet, have we?
Nope.
What name is that?
Bill Loadholt.
That's right. We haven't heard the name. Chris Clark, Denver Broncos.
How many right tackles do they have on this top 35 list?
Several. They went through a bunch of them because of injuries.
And they're all in the top 32.
Apparently so. The Denver Broncos do have offensive linemen now, and they've got a good system that features offensive linemen.
Well, in my opinion, one of the best franchises in the NFL when it comes to working with talent and getting the most out of them.
And
out of these no-name guys, too, a lot of oftentimes.
And Alex Gibbs, the guy that pretty much brought that entire offensive line system to Denver, and it never really has changed that much since then, but he's been the guru of that system and that finesse sort of offensive line play that they've had there. And any running back flourishes behind the Denver Bronco offensive line. They don't get them too big. Their idea is staying at about 295 or 300 pounds, not getting over that 305, 310, 315. They want them to still be able to move. Khalif Barnes from the Oakland Raiders, a pretty good tackle.
He's a veteran. He's been around
a long time. Anthony Davis.
Just retired today at 25 years of age for the San Francisco 49ers. I want to say at least their fourth, if not fifth, player, but their fourth player retiring before they really should have retired. 25 years of age, first-round draft pick, a very high draft pick.
Unbelievable.
Along with Mike Iupati, the San Francisco 49ers offensive line and the San Francisco 49ers linebacking crew, decimated by early retirements because they're, I want to say Anthony Davis said he's going to take at least a year off from the NFL because he wants his brain and his body to heal.
You won't come back from that. If you're an offensive lineman and you sat out for a couple of years, they won't even want you back. Much less, you're just going to come back on your own and just sign up. And it's not like signing up for seventh grade football and we just go back out there and play. No way. Number 21 out of the 35, Bobby Massey, a really good offensive lineman with the Arizona Cardinals. That is the biggest reason why the Cardinals have done so much better, is their offensive line and defensive lines are so much better now than recent history. About 4 or 5 years ago, they were just terrible. Joe Barksdale with the San Diego Chargers. Ooh. There's another one
that's
been around
for
a while. Tough player, and he's ranked number 20 out of the 35. Cornelius Lucas with the Detroit Lions.
Still haven't heard from Phil Loadholt.
Have not heard from Big Phil Loadholt yet. The 6'8", 343-pound mountain of a man. And I'm telling you what, if you stand next to him on the field, you would not believe how big he really is. He's gigantic. Luis Vasquez. He was a guard. I don't understand.
I was going to say.
He was a guard. I can't believe it. With Denver Broncos.
Again with the Broncos. That's four right tackles on the offensive line.
Why don't they keep it current? They're keeping free agents and everything lined up. Vasquez was traded in a big trade.
Hmm.
Derek Newton. Good player. Houston Texans. And been around for 3 years now and a physical player. Have we heard that guy's name yet?
Phil Loadholt, and what number are we at?
We're at number 16.
Number 16, so at least Phil Loadholt is in the top half
16
of best right tackles in the NFL.
Sam Young, Jacksonville Jaguars. We've got two Jacksonville Jaguar right tackles, and this one ranked fairly high when he's healthy.
Well,
and I don't know anyone from Jacksonville.
Is Phil Loadholt number one? Have you seen this?
I have seen this list.
Is he the best right tackle in the NFL? Keep listening find out.
Just the anxiety builds. Justin Pugh, New York Giants, at number 15. We're getting down there. Andre Smith, Cincinnati Bengals, number 14. Funny enough, Phil Loadholt shows up at number 13.
Phil Loadholt,
Minnesota Vikings.
What does it say about Phil Loadholt in the list of best right tackles in the NFL?
When Phil Loadholt at 6'8", 343 pounds. Is able to lock out his long arms on a defender, the massive right tackle almost always wins that battle. Despite having limited lateral agility, he's able to pick up outside stunts and wide rushes because of his reach and ability to take wide steps.
Yeah.
When he drops back, he is too apt to letting defenders get their hands into his chest. And, of course, when that happens, that enables them to get around the corner and have the leverage, and they get around him. But that happens from time to time with Phil Loadholt, but that's also why he's number 13. 13th best, though. And that's down to a fairly elite group. Let's get down to the top five, shall we? Let's walk on down the list here. Well, Zach Strief, you know him. He's with the New Orleans Saints. He's been a great right tackle for a long time for Drew Brees. Ryan Schrader of the Atlanta Falcons. Split time last year with Gabe. Doug Free, there's the one that we all know and recognize down in Dallas.
Been forever.
He and Martin, they are the three Pro Bowlers from Dallas' offensive line last year who blocked for Murray. So Marcus Gilbert, Pittsburgh Steelers, number 6. Down we go. DeMar Dotson, of course, Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I think he's probably the best one in some ways.
And young,
the right tackle.
Yeah.
Left tackles, there are some really good ones. Lane Johnson with the Philadelphia Eagles, fantastic right tackle. Sebastian Vollmer,
wow.
The Patriots always find people to replace. They don't miss anything with Mankins being gone. It's amazing how they find players. But, I mean, here's a guy that
ranks. They trade away first-round draft picks like it's their job.
And they always find the next guy. This is the number 3 right tackle in the game.
Best quarterback in the NFL right now, or possibly NFL history. No, I'm just drafting in the 6th round.
I don't know how
not
to
even
do
a starter in college.
Ricky Wagner of the Baltimore Ravens. Number 2 of all the right tackles in the league. And then, of course, from the University of Iowa, Brian Beluga of the Green Bay Packers.
Oh,
they
yeah,
rank him when he's healthy. And he has a lot of health issues. He's on and off the field with injuries all the time. But he is as good as they come as far as right tackles go in the National Football League.
I couldn't agree more. And I love the name Beluga, his last name, God-given last name, Beluga, because he is a whale.
He is, actually.
He's a whale. He's a mountain.
A monster, and he's got great technique. And as I said before, great hands, great feet, great hand placement. And that's why he's number one. Phil Lotholt, number 13. I was surprised. I thought that might be a little worse than that, actually. He missed about six games last year with a torn pec. Let's hope he gets back to full steam. Sillier Side of Sports are up next.
Oh, good.
True Superstar after that. We wrap it up for the week. We'll let you know how things are going to be working throughout the weekend. And, of course, next week we'll be at CHS Field.
On Monday,
right?
I'll be at CHS Field tomorrow with Sean Aronson, the voice of the St. Paul Saints, 5 to 7. Come down. We'll have tickets to give away. It's a very, I think there are probably still standing room tickets available, but we have a primo seats for the St. Paul Saints. Being the new stadium in town, everybody wants to go, and it's absolutely gorgeous. I don't blame you. We'll be down there 5 to 7, and then the game will be aired right here on Sports Radio 105 The Ticket, first pitch at 7:10 tomorrow night. And I believe, could be wrong here, but I believe the St. Paul Saints are 12-1 so far this year.
I think you're right. They've only lost one game.
One game.
I think so. That's the team. Well, hey, if you have new digs, you have a new place like that, you're going to play better, right?
Yeah.
Aren't you?
I think so.
I can't wait for the Viking Stadium to be done.
Yes.
But anyway, come on back, everyone.
Yes.
It's the Sillier Side of Sports,
yes,
and the True Superstar to finish,
yes,
up the show for the week. Next.
Hear the Bob Sansevier Show every Monday through Friday at 2 p.m. on Sports Radio 105 The Ticket.
The NASCAR Sprint Cup Series, only on 105 The Ticket.
Joey Logano just screams out into the lead. McMurray's locked in the second. Matt Kenseth and Kevin Harvick side by side for third.
It's time for racing at the Tricky Triangle, Pocono Raceway, with the Exalta We Paint Winners 400. Tune in NASCAR Sprint Cup Sunday at 11 a.m.
That's the battle for the lead in turn one.
This is Brad Keselowski.
This is Dylan Hart Jr.
This is Jeff Gordon.
This is Jimmy Johnson.
This is Kevin Harvick.
Your home for NASCAR in the Twin Cities is Sports Radio 105 The Ticket.
What's so funny?
Cue the music.
Cue it up.
Green.
Sillier Side of Sports.
Norm. This is the Booker T and the MGs, right? Booker T and the MGs.
I just threw that at your wiener. I apologize.
It's okay.
You're not having any more kids anyway. It's fine.
I don't think so.
Sillier Side of Sports. We do this every day. It's just the weird stuff that's going on. The Oakland A's, Josh Reddick. Shut down the Michael Jordan-LeBron James debate with one sentence. I thought it was pretty interesting. He said, nothing would please Warrior fans in the Bay Area more than to see the Warriors take down LeBron, he said. Dethrone him. As a good player as LeBron James is, he's not unbeatable. He's not Michael Jordan. When's the last time LeBron saved the Earth from an alien race?
Okay. Wow.
Which Michael Jordan did in Space Jam. Michael Jordan, by the way, never lost an NBA Finals series. He lost games, sure,
right,
but never lost a series.
Six, so he won all six, didn't he?
However,
I think he had some good, pretty competition. He faced all the best, I thought.
Who did?
Michael Jordan.
Well, it's interesting because Jason McIntyre from thebiglead.com, one of my favorite websites to get Sillier Side of Sports and stuff like that, he did an article that said LeBron James has had a weaker supporting cast and has faced tougher teams, winning percentage-wise, points-wise, all that stuff, than Michael Jordan did. Michael Jordan had a better supporting cast and faced weaker opponents.
Hmm.
According to data from Jason McIntyre on the Big Lead. Just so you know.
He went up against, I think, the best of the best, didn't he? I mean, I thought he did. He had Magic once, right? He had Charles Barkley once. He had Utah. He had...
He had Charles Barkley a couple times, maybe. Because I want to say...
Did he have a Houston or did he have a San Antonio?
Both, probably. Because Charles Barkley was with the Houston Rockets one time and with the Phoenix Suns one time.
That's correct.
Yeah.
I think he faced everyone that was someone. I know that much. And I know that the way he won those.
But I feel like teams now are more stacked than they were back then. There's more talent in the NBA now than there was back then.
I don't know. The teams that reach the finals every year seem to be stacked, both sides. Except for the Cleveland Cavaliers this time around. This is the weakest... Now that Kyrie's out, this is about the weakest team that's ever shown up in the finals, I think, in a long time.
It's just
been
LeBron James.
It's been LeBron James the entire year, I know, but who do they have after him? Now that Kyrie's down and Love, of course, I don't know if Love ever really counted.
Della Vidova or whatever that nutbag's name is.
Yeah.
In fact, talking about Cleveland, prices for Game 3 in Cleveland have now decreased 16% after the Cavs' Game 1 loss to the Warriors and the loss of Kyrie Irving. I don't think it's Cavs fans that are driving down the prices, but the people who are going just to be part of the NBA Finals aren't necessarily as interested because, I mean, who wants to go to a game and watch your hometown team get shellacked?
That's
I mean, I feel bad for LeBron James.
I do, too. I mean, he put up 44 points last night. It got him into an overtime, but they lost it. And now that Kyrie's out, I don't know what they're going to do. I just don't. If you can't, if a guy has to score over 44 points, and I mean, that still was only an overtime. It's not going to play out very well.
44 points, it was great with LeBron James. My biggest thing about LeBron James is he doesn't have that killer instinct that Kobe Bryant or Michael Jordan have, where down the stretch, they're hitting shots that really mean something. I want to say LeBron James scored only 2 points, the only 2 points the Cleveland Cavaliers scored in the overtime loss last night. The game was interesting until it got to overtime, and then I believe the Golden State Warriors got ahead, got a double-point lead, and it was just like double-digit lead, and I had to turn it off at that point because it's done. It was like a couple of minutes to go. It was 108-98 or something like that, and it was just stupid. It's frustrating. It's sad.
It really is.
James.
It really is. But I remember one finals. I thought he put the team on his back and earned it. Some of the things that they used to say and still say about Michael Jordan. I think that he had the one finals against I forget who it was, but it was when he was playing with Miami, obviously. And I think that he can light it up and still win a couple games if he decides he's going to score 44 and then assist everyone else. If he's the big assist guy and the triple-double guy, he might pull it off.
Aren't those people beautiful?
Yes, they are.
They made me.
How about that? Those are your parents.
Yeah.
Well, we got to stop the sillier side of sports and get them over here and talk.
Let's get over here. Come on.
I mean, we don't have to do sillier side of sports.
Come on. Hey,
we'll get a radio guy.
I know
guy.
You too.
We'll get a radio guy.
Everybody
in here.
I know is showing up. My lord, that's Anita.
Now you have to take.
My dad's an old radio guy. Let's get him on the horn.
I know he is.
Mike,
hold on a second.
Hey, Mike, can you pot this up for us?
Ladies and gentlemen,
this is my dad, Reed Holson, by the way.
Here is a radio voice.
Nice to meet you, superstar.
How are you?
I've always wanted to meet you.
Absolutely. Well,
yeah,
yeah,
great
I don't know
you.
About that.
Yeah.
I've been told so many good things about you. You've got a great son, by the way.
No.
And I've never met anyone in my life more committed to family and loves his family more than Ben Holson.
Yeah, we love him. Love him dearly, too. Our family's very important to us.
You got a good one here.
Yeah, thank you.
I mean, I've learned more from him in the time that I've been here for a couple of years now, almost a year and a half, as far as you know, doing spots and doing commercial spots and doing that kind of thing. I've gotten more out of him than I have anyone else.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Makes me proud. Thank
so
you.
I think he's the best in the business.
Which is very nice of you to say because I hate your guts.
It's amazing. And now I know that we're on the same page.
Yeah, exactly.
If you hadn't said that, I would have worried. But
exactly.
But I think that now you, we've been told here at Radioactive Sports that you have just moved to a new home, a new condo.
Yeah, we've downsized.
Well, it's about time. Now you can relax and downsize and go do what you want to do.
Palatial mansion is the first step towards assisted living. And so we can see it from here.
Yeah, it's a matter of time. Just ease into it, right?
That's right.
Just accept it and ease into it.
Got the ostomy supplies in the cabinets, you know, ready to go.
I think you should give your father a story to read, sillier side of sports, and let him show everyone how this is done.
Okay. Let's read that one.
Sillier side of sports.
Oh, the one at the bottom?
Yeah.
This is Ben Holson's father.
Reed Holson.
Reed Holson. Take it away, sir.
Ohio State's quarterback, Cardale Jones, may have gotten himself into some hot water on Thursday night. Some racy remarks about women sports enthusiasts showed up on Jones's Twitter timeline, which were quickly deleted. Jones immediately went with the "I've been hacked" excuse.
Now, is
here
it good?
Here are the tweets.
So good.
Here are the tweets. You ready?
Natural. Yeah.
Chicks kill me. Chicks kill me.
Of course.
So-called having a favorite sports team. Well, I hope the yellow and blue team win because my sister, baby, father, uncle, cousin wore yellow and blue to the prom. Face ass. Don't get me wrong. Nothing like a female who knows her sports.
See, now, you are almost there.
I know.
Ben Holson, you're almost there. That's the old crafty, wise, and experienced radio voice.
Oh, thank you. Well,
Reed Holson.
Thank you.
Wow. And now he's already being served drinks on the house.
Don't you love it here at the office on Washington?
It's the best ever. It's a great place.
I think I've been here in the 90s. I don't remember much of the 90s, but I think I've been here.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, you know,
here
back in the radio days, back in the 90s, we used to.
Well, you're probably next door.
Have some corporate gatherings here. Yeah.
Deja vu.
No, not that one.
How many years were you in radio? Obviously, you've done a lot of radio.
Let's see here. 35 years,
jeez.
I think it was. Started when I was 15.
Nice
so did
run.
I.
Nice run.
I'm at 19 years. So I was at a bank today, and they asked, what have you been doing, blah, 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 blah. I started 15. I'm going to be 34 this summer. 19 years of radio. Unbelievable.
Jeez, I've been doing radio since part-time, 93, with Common for 7 years. We'll just say that. We'll leave
it
there.
That's crazy.
And then I've gotten 14 years in, 14 and a half years in now. That's more than I played professional football.
Holy smokes.
I've done more radio.
I've always wanted to ask you this.
Oh, go ahead.
Hurry
up.
30 seconds. Throw a football between your legs.
67 miles.
I was talking to him this weekend. I said, you got to catch a long snap from the superstar.
Because they put a gun on me.
It'll break your fingers. We have to go. Dad, I love you to death. Thanks for stopping by.
I love you all, too. I love you all.
Thank you very much, superstar. Let's wrap it up. Take us home. Sillier Side of Sports.
That is the Sillier Side of Sports, now a true superstar. Pull it down a little bit. Army Sergeant Major Wardell Turner. 48 years of age, from Nanticoke, Maryland, assigned to the headquarters U.S. Army Garrison, Fort Drum, New York. He died November 24th in Kabul, Afghanistan, of wounds suffered in a vehicle-borne improvised explosive device attack. Also killed was Army Specialist Joseph Riley. But please do remember Army Sergeant Major Wardell Turner in your hearts and prayers, if you would, please. He died November 24th, 2014. A brave man. Taking care of us. And we can do radio like this. Remember him in your hearts and prayers. Good night.
Sports Radio, 105 The Ticket.